Scott, the one and only, the big, I was going to call you the big pretty, but that's our other friends podcast. We're live from Apartments Unknown. So how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Deep in the heart of Apartments Unknown. Feels good.
Feels real good to
feels
be here.
Feels real good
you,
to be here.
Listener, all up in your ears.
You could be anywhere in the world.
But you chose to be here with that. What is that? What rap song is that from?
That's from Jay-Z. You could be anywhere in the world. I think it's maybe I don't remember. It's a Jay-Z song, I know that, and also the Comedy Zone. It's how their MCs have to introduce every show as well.
You had gigs this weekend, this past weekend?
Greensboro Comedy Zone.
How'd that go?
It was good. It was good. Greensboro. Heart of Flair Country.
Why are you giving me the thumbs down? He's not giving me the thumbs down.
No, it was, of course, a lot of fun, you know, because
is that the one
they
where
still
it's
book
got
me.
The big honky-tonk across the parking
yes,
lot?
Yes, it does. Arizona Pete's.
That is I Arizona. Did that one. The whole, you can go to the show, you can go to Arizona Pete's, I think, for like $10.
No, 15.
15, but if you go to the show for, well, you pay
10.
And then you can go to Arizona Pete's afterwards.
For free. So
it's like the daycare before you go. It's like it's pre-gaming before
yep,
you go.
Everybody is pretty much there just to get through the comedy show so they can get their free ticket to Arizona Pete's. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can imagine it's the perfect crowd to sit and listen to an hour and a half of people talking about, you know.
Man, we're going to get tore up at this foam party.
And most of them start the pre-gaming pretty hard at the comedy club.
They probably start before the comedy
club. Oh, absolutely. The parking lot. But no, it was a fun weekend.
I was in Louisville, Kentucky, doing a comedy festival down there because I'm talented, and I can't say that without a straight face. And I love walking down. There's an area called Bardstown Road. It's in the area is called the Highlands, but it's Bardstown Road, where the club is on. And I just love walking up and down because they have, it's a lot of local restaurants and. Local places. I have not this shirt, but there's a store called Why Louisville, and it's just local shirts. So for some reason, I have a shirt with a jackalope on it. It says Kentucky. I have one with Yeti on it. It says Kentucky. And I have another one. I have one with the Loch Ness Monster in the water with the skyline of Kentucky. So I have more Kentucky shirts than I have Indiana shirts. But it was a fun weekend, and I was walking down. I was driving down first, and there's some kind of festival, so I go eat, and then I go check out the festival, and it's a gay pride festival, not a parade, but a festival, so the street's blocked off, and I'm just walking up and down.
Getting catcalled, I'm sure.
Yeah, where you going with that ass, boy? Mm-mm-mm. But that was fun, and I was just by myself, which I'm sure you do. Do you do stuff on the road by yourself?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a necessity, but I also like being alone.
I go to movies by myself on the road. There's a handful of people I like going to movies with. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend mm-hmm. is one. Dave Landau, mm-hmm. our good friend, is yeah. another. Matt Holt, yeah. another friend, because they get it.
Yeah,
I don't like to talk during movies. I don't like to hear people talk. I have a very tough time with like attention spans. I have adult ADHD or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to really focus on a movie, and especially some movies, it's hard to suspend disbelief to begin with.
Yeah.
Like Annabelle, it's hard to get lost in a movie about a doll killing people.
Yeah, when somebody's face is lit up like they're telling a ghost story from their phone. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Or they're talking, which is just the worst, and it drives me crazy. When I go to a kid's movie, I mm-hmm. expect it. When I go to a movie with my daughter, like I expect that the kids are going to be rowdy and talking. But I've been to kids' movies where the parents were the issues, and that drives me crazy because I'm like, you're also setting up another generation of awful moviegoers. Mm-hmm. Like you're teaching bad lessons.
Yeah.
So I love doing stuff by myself on the road.
Oh, it's the best. And I did go see Black Mass. I didn't go see it by myself. And then Matt Holt, our mutual friend, went and to go see it. And we talked about it on a podcast. It's not out yet, but it'll be called Watching Stuff with Matt and Brent. So we'll have the review and our thoughts on that.
Which I'm sure will be available on iTunes
and
Podomatic and
sure,
Stitcher and
all that,
all platforms.
But I'm walking down the street at this at the gay festival. What if it was just
a regular
festival?
Festival.
I was like, oh, it's pretty gay.
Gay
here.
Festival.
And I walk past this one booth, and this guy points at me. I have headphones, and he points at me, and he holds up this shirt, and I go, I didn't read the shirt, but then I read it, and it says made with real ginger. And I'm a redhead. You can't tell that audibly. But I'm like, oh, that's
no,
pretty
no,
funny.
You can tell.
There's a redhead accent. But so in the really when I think gay pride parade, not festival, I think of when you Google it, the images, there's going to be dudes in Speedos and stuff.
Yeah.
Only one guy in a Speedo and everybody else was dressed normally. And I just look at people. I'm like, I don't think that guy's gay. So people were just hanging out and it was fun. But then there's that one guy that was just in the Speedo. I'm like, dude.
Little out of place here.
Nobody else is dressed like this.
Yeah.
So, but it was fun. Yeah. So we can get into the wrestling.
Well, there's nothing wrestling fans want to hear more about than a gay Pride Festival.
Yeah. So we're 6 minutes in. We're going to finally talk about wrestling.
It's Adam and Eve bomb, not Adam and Steve bomb.
We're going to talk about a little later in the show. This movie that I watched, Matt Holt turned me on to it, and I watched it while I was in Louisville. It's called Card Subject to Change. It's about the indie wrestling scene, and I had Brad watch it too. So we're going to get into that, but I have some news stories and stuff that we want to talk about. First one, and they promoted it pretty heavily during Night of Champions, and then again Raw the next night, is the Brock Lesnar Go to Hell Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on this at all?
They already announced that the main event for Hell in a Cell is going to be Lesnar and Taker Part 3,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm guessing is going to be a Hell in a Cell match, I would assume.
Have they already said? The promo, and it was a little underwhelming to hear it that way.
Yeah.
Because I want to hear Undertaker's music hit when Brock's in the ring.
And then they set up the match that way.
Yeah, it's a little, I wish they would have held that, and here's Hell in a Cell. He's scheduled to be there. Then we find out that it's against The Undertaker.
I think their thought is they want to get the attention of the people watching the current pay-per-view to keep their subscription for another month.
But the
because they don't have the contracts anymore. Everybody's month to month.
But
so.
the people that have the WWE Network are fans. They're already going to watch, I would think. Nobody just
well, but you also may have the casual fan who was watching it at a friend's who now they see Brock Lesnar is going to be at the next one. You know what I'm saying?
He's just going to go over to his friend's house.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know. I just
It was definitely not a classic way to promote it, but.
And with the network, it's a new way of promoting things because it's not like you can just turn it on.
Yeah.
You have to subscribe to it. So it's a different way of promoting things. And in that particular instance, I think it kind of hurts they're all about theatrics and dramedy, you know.
Well, I was surprised they didn't even really address it. I mean, neither were at Raw the following night. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you almost could have waited a week to promote it.
It's October 3rd.
Yeah.
That's when it's scheduled to happen. And what's the date today? September
23rd?
September 23rd. So,
they could have easily have...
Depending on when you're listening to it, it doesn't matter. But, you know, we're still talking about it. It's just a different way to promote things, you know?
Yeah, and I agree, though. I always enjoy the surprise Undertaker appearances.
Yeah.
And have they
done this with a wrestler? Because, you know, they shine a spotlight on Brock Lesnar quite often. Not often, but... significantly when he is around. Have they had a tour before for a superstar?
I mean, dating back to the Lex Express tour, which was when Lex Luger first came to the WWE from WCW.
Yeah.
He was first promoted as this narcissist character who was mm-hmm. obsessed with looking at himself and managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah.
And then he did a face turn after Yokozuna had a body slam challenge on this aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Lex showed up in a helicopter after everybody else failed,
mm-hmm.
and they did the classic, he eats rice during the competition, mm-hmm. and the announcers are like, well, that's not fair! He's just adding more weight!
Are you sure that was even planned?
He was just eating rice? So, Lex shows up in these American pants, like
of
American
course.
Flag pants, and he slams Yokozuna, and then he was... supposed to be fighting him at that next SummerSlam. So he did the Lex Express tour
mm-hmm.
where he went around on this big giant bus that had his I believe it had his picture on it, or it just had like stars and stripes everywhere, and it said Lex Express. And he went to all these small towns, like a political candidate, almost. Like, and they had vignettes. Yeah, exactly. They had vignettes of he's America's hero, and then he goes to SummerSlam, and he wins the match by count out.
Oh God!
And they come, but the weird thing was, they had all the wrestlers from the back, all the faces come out and like hold him up on their shoulders, and they had confetti. And, like, even the people in the audience were like,
dude, it was count out.
Yeah, he don't even have the belt.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't win the belt. You won by count out because he was so big, he couldn't get himself back in the ring.
Yokozuna had the belt at the time, right?
Yes.
So they had a belt extension, like, on a plane? How did that work? I'm being honest.
He just carried it over his shoulder.
I feel like they should manufacture some extra buttons to snap on.
For the bigger champion?
Yeah.
You're
going to have to charge extra to wear this belt.
When's the last big guy champion? Speaking of which, I mean, Big Show maybe? But Big Show's honestly, I mean, he's not like the classic big guy. Like Brodus Clay was a big guy. Mm-hmm. He's a fat guy.
Yeah.
He looked fat. You know, like a
Mark
big
Henry,
fat guy.
Maybe?
Mark.
And he's not fat.
He was just, again, a massive guy.
Maybe you don't see too many fat guys anymore wrestling.
Yeah, they get there, the.
And subject to change, card subject to change, Kumal is in there and he's fat.
Which is actually pre-diabetic, lost his feet,
oh,
Kamala.
He
yeah, he's
oh, wow.
in a wheelchair now, man. He's in bad shape.
So they have a wheelchair match. Wow, that's crazy. Well, we'll talk about it. We'll get into it because, you know, we're saving it. We're saving it for the air. No, so the Brock Lesnar Go to Hell tour that's scheduled.
Yeah, so I think I don't remember them doing something like this. And it does add some spice to this month that you have an extra, you know, house show that's going to be on the network.
And it's in Madison Square Garden, so it's not just a regular.
I remember the first kind of thing they did like this was the Tokyo, Beast
Japan.
In the East, and I was on vacation with my girlfriend and her family, and I was watching it. You know, on my phone out there. And it was, you know, like it was cool. It was something different.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be the same thing with this. You know, you're not used to having it on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. It's going to be live. You have the tag team championship on the,
here's the card right here.
Well,
Rusev and Dolph Ziggler, WWE Intercontinental Champion Kevin Owens versus Chris Jericho. So we know he's going to keep the belt till then.
Yeah.
Tag team champions New Day versus Dudley Boys. Seth Rollins versus John Cena, and one, two, three of those matches are from Night of Champions.
Yeah. But.
And the new one is Owens versus Chris Jericho.
I think Cena and Rollins will have a good match. Because.
I just, you know, given that both of them are wrestling, I think it's just a good match. Especially,
yeah.
I think most matches Cena are in are good.
Yeah, and I think they're going to – because I felt like their match was a little underwhelming and not, for both of their standards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was still a good match, but for both of their standards, I thought it was a little subpar for each. So I think they'll actually go out – because both guys care.
Yeah.
You know, and both guys are trying to be innovative, and they're going to want to do – so it's like when Cena and Orton used to fight so much.
Yeah.
They eventually started evolving, and there was the match at the Rumble where they both hit each other's finishers, you know, a couple of times.
Yeah.
And Cena was doing an RKO, which was cool to see.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So then and then it's Lesnar and Big Show.
And you know, they're starting to build Big Show back up as this, you know, unstoppable force.
Is there no Divas match?
No, not according to my source right here.
I wonder if they're going to add one.
I would think they would.
You'd have to have at least one, right?
I would think.
Because, I mean, the Divas are getting pretty prominent.
Yeah, I would hope they would, and I
would imagine you want to showcase Charlotte. Yeah, I think a good match would be Charlotte and Becky Lynch versus Paige and anybody really.
Maybe see Nikki Bella.
I don't think
they like each other, but I think they could work with each other as far as a standpoint.
Or you could even have the Bella Twins versus Charlotte and Becky Lynch, and have Paige do a run in or do commentary.
Guest ref. That
Ooh,
would never happen.
No, they don't do that enough anymore. The special guest referee who's a superstar involved, you know.
Yeah.
Like I can't even remember the last time they had.
Was that Mike
besides
Tyson?
Triple H. Well, Mike Tyson was great. He wasn't even a referee. They made him a special enforcer
okay.
where he just stood outside the ring and then jumped in the jumped in at the end and counted.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it'll be a good show. I think it's different, and as long as they don't do this every month,
yeah,
it needs to be something that's a little bit special, because the last one was, I guess, I think August,
July 4th. So is what yeah, says, be every, around there.
I could deal with every other month.
Yeah.
You know, doing a special mm-hmm. house show live Saturday night type thing. Bring back Saturday night's main event, but make it live mm-hmm. and make it
more of a spectacle.
Yeah, don't make it main event where it's all mid-card guys
yeah.
wrestling with no purpose just in matches, which yeah. is entertaining, but make it like a bonus Raw. Mm-hmm. Do it once a month, Saturday night's main event,
yeah.
where you have, you know, started at 11, you know, o'clock, or even, you know, hell, started at, you know, 9, that way you don't avoid any Saturday Night Live confliction or anything yeah. like that, and do an actual real show where your top card guys, Cena, Rollins, everybody's on the card. Mm-hmm. Something could happen. Have a belt change yeah. hands occasionally to keep up the interest, because that's become the problem with SmackDown, I think. It's way yeah. too predictable, and it's basically just like a diet version of Monday Night Raw.
It's a kind of rehash Raw.
Yep.
Here's what happened.
And then this is a lot of times it's the same match or a slight variation. Mm-hmm. They'll team up a couple of heels versus a couple of faces and put them in a tag team match. And again, nothing significant ever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think another aspect is being pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Kind of gives away a lot of its thunder.
They record on Tuesday and it airs on
Thursday.
Thursday, okay. So there's a couple days with the internet, it could all the results.
Oh, most of them are. I mean, you yeah. can go on Bleacher Report and mm-hmm. see, you know, SmackDown spoilers on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I don't even watch SmackDown. Mm-hmm. I'll just read about it on Bleacher Report and see if there's any. I still record it just in case there's anything.
Yeah.
You know, that I want to go back and watch. But yeah, I wish they would do more, make more of those events special.
Yeah.
As opposed to just fillers, which it feels what SmackDown is, just a weekly filler, so that people who are fiending, you know, it's just mm-hmm. like a lot of times the Monday or the Thursday night football game, it'll yeah. be like Jacksonville versus Oakland, which are two, like, horrible teams.
Who's to carry you over into
yeah,
the
exactly. It's like, yeah, but people will, you know, will still watch because mm-hmm. it's football. So,
and that's scheduled this Brock Go to Hell tour. That particular event is October 3rd. And that'll be in Madison Square Garden.
And then once do they have another stop on the Go to Hell tour, or is it just the Madison Square Garden and then Hell in a Cell?
I think there's more, and there was more on the promos they aired, but this article that I have is just kind of that one big house show.
I think I read somewhere where they have Lesnar, I believe, for maybe close to all the Raws.
Mm-hmm.
Heading into Hell in a Cell.
I'm looking it up. Here's an updated article. No new changes to the lineup. Yeah. I'm not seeing anything else.
Well, it just makes you wonder, what are they going to... I mean, even after Hell in a Cell, what are they going to do with, you know...
Yeah, what do they do? Does Rollins retain the belt? Or did... Because now he's going to feud with Kane. Does Kane win the belt?
I can't see him putting the belt.
I hope
on Kane.
They do.
I mean, it would be different, mm-hmm. but again, it would honestly just kind of play into the way they've booked Rollins up to this point.
Yeah,
I mean, he hasn't. You know,
Do you see Brock getting it down the line?
I see definitely Brock getting it again.
But you know he's not going to be full-time wrestler.
No, but I think he's...
You know, but Heyman could come in and cut promos.
Exactly. And I think he's one of the very few guys. I think The Rock could do it as well, and The Rock did do it a couple years ago. But I think he's one of the very few guys that can be a part-time champion where he's not on every, you know, show.
Mm-hmm. And you listen to people like Jim Ross talk about sometimes you don't want the champ on all the time.
Well, I think you want... The champ represented.
Represented, but you know.
But you know, yeah, he doesn't have to fight every week like mm-hmm. Cena did, you know, to be over. And with a guy like Brock Lesnar, he's a spectacle. It's like Andre the Giant was back in those territory days where people would just go to see the Giant, mm-hmm. you know. And it was, if you would have seen him every single week, then it's like Big Show, where you're not impressed by the fact that he's a 7-foot, 450-pound monster.
Well, with Andre, too, he wasn't as mobile as Big Show.
No, not at all. And that says something
mm-hmm.
as to how much bigger his lore was. Yeah, because Big Show is athletic, mm-hmm. and still people are kind of like, he's just a 7-foot, 450-pound man.
But he is on TV for, you know, 6 hours a week if he's on Raw and SmackDown.
But I tell you what, man, when I saw him live, I was still just like, holy cow, that guy is just huge. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Lesnar. When you see him in person, man, his size is it's very smart. He could be a part-time guy and still keep interest up.
Cool. I got this other article. It's 10 things WWE need to stop doing right now. So, any predictions before I go through this? What do you think they need to stop doing?
Pushing Cena.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing part-time guys.
Mm-hmm. Let's just go through and see.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Number 10, expecting fans to get excited over familiar returns.
I agree with that.
Because the most recent ones are Kane and Jericho.
But Jericho, to me...
Jericho's more of a novelty type thing.
Yep, and anytime he comes back is good. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with... But Kane, yeah. Because it's just...
I'm excited for Kane to come back.
Yeah, but I would say the majority of people have kind of grown tired just because we've seen this... But like I said, I like what they did on Raw following it. But when he first came back, I was just kind of like, this is what happens every time around Hell in a Cell because they can play in the whole demon, you know. Yeah. So it felt very routine. But I like what they're doing with the split personality.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do that a little bit too much. And especially like, I mean, even Orton coming back.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't seem to get excited. There wasn't a huge pop. I mean, he got a pop, but it wasn't.
Number 9, triumphalism. I didn't know if that was a word or not, but triumphalism over WCW victory. And this article right here, it's been 15 years since WCW was bought by WWE. And, of course, the main guy is Sting. But he's also 56. How much can you have him win at this point anyway?
Exactly. Well, and
most of those guys from WCW aren't going to win.
He did an interview where he said he came back to put guys over.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's okay
aware
with
of the
that.
Role.
Yeah, I don't think they've bait and switched him.
Yeah.
And said, "Hey, we're going to do this for you and now, you know, instead we're going to have you keep losing."
And he's making his money.
Exactly. And I mean, he got to wrestle at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
They even made him look strong by making sure Triple H had to have D-Generation X, come out.
I just wish, instead of, a TNA run that he did, which I haven't really watched much of anything besides a few YouTube things, but I really wish he would have come over after the whole buyout or whatever. Maybe not right after, but eventually in more of his prime to see what they could have done with
him.
Because, like I said, he's 56 now.
So, well, everybody wanted to see Undertaker versus Sting for years. And that is definitely not an option anymore.
Vince McMahon claims to do is to listen to the fans.
Yeah. The fans had to force Daniel Bryan down their throat.
Yeah. But when they try and force Roman Reigns down people's throat and it didn't work, they know that it didn't work. And I just wish, don't say it if you're not going to follow through.
Yeah.
That was number 9. Number 8 is John Cena performing the springboard stunner.
I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where, it's an attribute to him that he learned a new move that looked very impressive the first time he did it.
Mm-hmm.
First time he did it. But again, he's on TV so much, back in the day, he would have gone territory to territory.
Yeah.
And it would have been like a comic that does a new hour every year. Mm-hmm. He would have came back with this new move. And he would have done it town to town, and people would have been amazed, and he would have been praised as, like, that's the thing, when he does new stuff, he never gets praised for it.
Yeah.
He never gets the credit for doing innovative things and expanding, the moves he uses in the ring.
So then, I mean, if it's just that one move where things have to fall in place, what about, Rey Mysterio, was it the 619?
Yeah.
Where the guy's head has to be outside the ring. And if you go back and watch old pay-per-views, which I've been doing, you're like, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
Or the curb stomp, which I like that move, but they've since done away with it with Rollins. But the guy's got to be down on all fours, and he just comes steps on his head, essentially. But, I mean, then what's the difference between those moves and the springboard stunner, which is not his finisher at all?
No, because people don't like John Cena.
Yeah.
And it just... It just gets annoying.
Yeah, but nobody complains when John Cena will pick up, you know, three wrestlers at once, and he's done it, you know, something similar with three wrestlers or the Big Show or something. Mm-hmm. Nobody complains about that.
No, he had Big Show and Edge on his shoulders from, I believe he was on the still on the second rope.
Yeah, so nobody complains about that. I think this is nitpicky shit right
yep,
here.
Very much so.
All right, number seven, insane amount of camera cuts. I don't really care one way or the other about this one. Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, again, it feels very nitpicky.
And I think one of the things is it's the top 10 things, so we needed 10 items to
fill it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, sometimes it's probably out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You saw what happened when you have a bad camera angle of Sheamus's brogue kick.
Yeah, when he missed.
He completely
Mark
misses,
Henry.
Yeah, and you can see the whiff. Same thing with Dolph Ziggler. We even noticed that Dolph Ziggler during Night of Champions, when he gave Rusev that DDT,
mm-hmm.
you could clearly see from the angle they were at that his head never hit the mat.
Mm-hmm.
And Rusev still sold it. Whereas on Monday, as soon as he did that move, they cut to the opposite side.
Yeah.
So you couldn't tell, you know, either way.
This is good wrestling because, Brad, you and I have been to some wrestling, and it's really bad.
Yeah.
Like, so.
It looks like it's just in a garage.
So it was a warehouse, if we're being honest. But, I mean, you want to, again, it's being nitpicky about, a guy whiffed on something. Again, he's on TV for several hours a week and wrestling five nights a week. Sometimes it just happens.
Yep.
And it's wrestling. It's not real.
Yeah, it's a live show.
Yeah.
Yeah. At some
Live
point,
things happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's expecting somebody to be completely, you know, choreographed on point every second of every match is impossible. Same thing. You know, I've tripped. I hit my head on a light at a show one time. Mm-hmm. I was going up on stage. I had these lights hanging down. It was like this tent show.
Yeah.
And I just banged. I've gone on stage over 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, things happen. Number six,
telegraphing major matches before pay-per-views. So what that essentially means is, let's have the match before, you know, let's have it on Monday night, as they did with Charlotte and Nikki Bella. But then on Sunday we're gonna have the same match. I think everybody kind of knows that the title's not gonna switch hands.
No, yeah, I agree with this one. Yeah,
unless it's not for the title and there's some kind of stipulation to it. Give me, you know, it's a whole pay-per-view type aspect because that match is happening there. It's not happening on Monday. So I do agree with this. Make it special.
Yeah.
Know? Give me something different than what I've paid to see on
Sunday. The worst thing you can be in professional wrestling is, you know,
predictable.
Predictable, yeah. Is for anybody to be able to expect what's going to happen. You want... The part of the suspension of disbelief is not knowing what's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, week to week, and knowing it's just that. And they used to be really bad with that. Just even telling you the main event, you knew the main event of every Raw in the opening segment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's six guys in the ring. Three are faces. Three are heels. What do you want to bet? It's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they announce the match, they act like it's this groundbreaking historical match announcement. It's where you're like,
It was all there for us to put together.
Yeah, and that's the worst. Yeah, predictability is the worst thing you can be in professional wrestling, by far.
And with that, we're going to, from number six, we're going to go to number five and be predictable. announcers making jokes during serious situations. I mean, what's a serious situation?
Yeah, that's...
Really? When Sting gets hurt, they probably know to not make... jokes. I don't think this one's a valid.
This
point.
Yeah. This is like the people who say the Latin players in baseball who like will just watch their home run. Play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Yeah. It's just come on. Well, let's not take this too serious. At the end of the day, it's professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I like it when they make jokes.
Yeah, I think it's funny.
I don't. King, yeah, it's King, not. It's Darren not Waller. Like it's not like Jim Ross was making. You know,
slobber knocker.
Was making puns after Owen Hart fell to his death.
Yeah, that wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're serious when they need to be serious, mm-hmm. but these guys, you know, and people...
Well, they're employed for a reason because they're good at their job.
Yeah, people shit on Michael Cole a lot, but Michael Cole's a good announcer.
All the stuff he has to do
to
tell you about the network for only...
Yeah, do you think $9.99. He... 99, yeah, do you think he wants to do that?
No,
you know?
He'd rather just call a match.
Yep, And they released, I think it was like a month or two ago, they released one of it's one of the Vince one of the sheets Vince McMahon gives to the announcers on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And it'll have like, okay, words we're not going to use to describe things.
It's crazy.
Words we are going to use.
Fans. Yeah. Fans, it's WWE Universe.
I mean, they have so many. Of course, I'm sure at point in time they want to acknowledge the CM Punk chants in the arena and people going, why won't they? They don't want to lose their job.
Yeah.
There's one guy that makes that decision. It's Vince McMahon. If you're
and
not
he's biased, how could you can't be one guy and not be biased?
Exactly. You can say you don't like the way a person is with a character, but Michael Cole has pretty much been a heel announcer most of the time, and he does a good job of making people not like him.
And now, I think when he's playing the role of delivering, you know, announcements and shit, like he's neutral.
Yeah, and he does a very good job. Mm-hmm. He doesn't stumble. He's professional.
Yeah.
You know, he shows up. He's there. He's been there, almost every week for years?
Yeah.
And the one person I kind of get annoyed with at times sometimes is when JBL tries to do, like, topical things.
Yeah.
Because it sounds a little forced.
You can tell it's a written line.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't mind that.
No, it's...
As having one of the Usos on the announced team, and he doesn't contribute anything at all.
Yeah.
Give me somebody that says something... And is not just repeating what there's a guy next to him just said, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, people always believe that jobs are way easier when people are really good at them or doing them. You know, there's people that think they could do this podcast that we're doing right now.
Yeah, you people wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know.
Podcast if it slapped you in the ears. Or I don't know how to put that sentence together. But number four, wrestlers inexplicably seeing ropes as barriers. So, you know... Then here's the picture of Rusev's running out of the ring and Dolph Ziggler's up on the ropes. Come back, you know. Again, I think that's just the aspect of wrestling.
Yeah.
The action happens in the ring for the most part. I don't see this as a problem.
No. And that's
if they were gonna go fight, then that segment could go on forever.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not supposed to fight at all times. It's more of a grandstanding thing. The heel is seen running away from the triumphant hero that wants to stand in the ring and fight.
That's part
of the storytelling.
Yeah, that's dumb. Next, right? Seth Rollins using the pedigree. How do you feel?
I mean,
they
were nervous about the curb stomp. It wasn't ideal. It wasn't Seth Rollins' choice. They were nervous about the curb stomp because of the concussions and everything else.
And kids doing it.
So
that's an easy one to replicate. All you got to do is step on your friend's head.
Exactly. And so they changed it to the pedigree, which made sense because he is kind of being, they started off with him being molded as Triple H's protege.
Mm-hmm.
So it made perfect sense. It's a move, you know, that looks devastating.
Yeah.
It's a good looking move.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I worked for Triple H for years. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
And I think inevitably it sets up a Rollins-Triple H feud.
And not to mention that, Rollins does a good job of incorporating new stuff into every match.
Yeah, with the flips.
So
suplex off the top rope into another suplex. I think this is, again, nitpicky. And that's a stipulation of the Triple H Rollins is, you know... One of us can only use the pedigree for the rest of our career.
Yeah.
That's an aspect of it, you know? So, again, I don't think that's a valid point. Number two, the fact that wins and losses don't matter.
I agree with that.
But I think it does matter. So, Brock Lesnar, there's a reason that he wins all the time.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I agree. Like, the fact that they don't treat wins and losses like they matter is an issue. Mm-hmm. Like, And it's the same thing with the title.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have clean wins for the title from time to time. It can't, like, every match can't end in some type of DQ.
Count out or DQ.
Count out.
Yeah.
And guys, like, I mean, they had months where Ziggler never won. They have months where Cesaro never wins.
But he's still being pushed.
Yeah. Sting. Like we did the Night of Champions preview, Sting was 0-1 in his WWE career and fighting for the championship.
But does a legacy not matter at all?
It does, but I don't know. Sting's maybe an exception.
But
there's still a lot of other
Sting,
Sheamus. Mm-hmm. Why does Sheamus win Money in the Bank? He hadn't won anything up to that point. Why was he even in the Money in the Bank match?
He's already been champion, though, right?
Yeah. But again, at some point in time, you need to have, you know, they did that a little bit with Rusev.
Yeah.
With his streak. But, yeah, I can see, I agree with that point. There's a lot of times where.
Then what about Cena with, if he can lose to Kevin Owens, who, you know, his first real feud in the WWE, if Cena can lose.
Well, and it was a huge deal because mm-hmm. Cena hadn't lost.
Yeah.
You know, for a little while going into that match. So
you think it's a valid point?
I think it's a valid point. I do think they need to treat him, you know, like at least more. I agree more with the fact that they need to finish matches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain heels need to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And certain faces need to win. You can't put a guy over if he keeps losing.
Okay. So it's as in, I don't know.
Kevin Owens, after he had that feud with Cena, mm-hmm. lost a lot.
Yeah.
And it took away from his character.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're starting to put him back, yeah. you know, in the picture, and he's starting to get more wins. But when he just kept losing, same thing with Cesaro and Ziggler.
I think part of it is the handicap of having to produce so much content.
Yeah.
As far as 3 hours.
Roster size and guys that they actually trust.
Yeah. And it's a lack of looking down, you know, looking to next week as opposed to looking for the next year.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm not in the position of booking or writing a show. So it could be I'm the Monday morning commissioner. But I don't know. That's the way I see it is, you know, they're only concerned about what's happening tomorrow night. But maybe they're also just trying to please the fans or give the fans what they think they want, which I don't think they do. But, you know, maybe they're just concerned.
No, it feels like they spite their fans a lot, which sometimes is a good thing. Like the fans
like
now.
Like the organization can be a heel on its own.
Exactly. Like the Daniel Bryan thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was so, if you look back on it, that was the perfect way mm-hmm. to do that was to have him be continuously screwed over and denied and look like they were not going to have him,
yeah,
you know, in the picture whatsoever. And whether they legitimately weren't and then added him, it made it so much better that he finally got his moment at WrestleMania.
And he's also like, oh, I'm selling t-shirts.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that. He was way more popular on his way up because that's mm-hmm. That's what we do in our society. We're so cynical. Yeah. We love people on their way up who don't have mm-hmm. something. And then as soon as they get that something, mm-hmm. we want to tear them down because now we don't like them.
Now, he ain't shit.
Yeah. Who's he think he is? Well, he's the guy that last week you said was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Number one, wrestlers visibly talking during matches.
I don't see it enough. I haven't noticed it enough either. So maybe, I don't know, maybe
you
I'm...
You can kind of tell if somebody's in a headlock, that's probably what they're doing.
Yeah, but that's again...
That's how it works.
It's because we know.
Yeah.
I think, like, because in the 90s, they were doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but people weren't as aware of that,
yeah.
so they just assumed that they were talking shit to each other.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of, like, you know, you'll hear a lot of heels, they'll kind of like... And Kevin Owens does a good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
He'll say something, and then he'll say something slightly louder.
That's the point I was going to make, is that maybe there just needs to be more in-ring talk. Because,
yeah, so that it can blend in.
Because when you do watch a movie, they're always, if there's a fight, they kind of have a snarky line to say or, you know, something like that, where maybe there just needs to be more talk, trash talk in the ring.
Yeah, that way it can just blend in
yeah.
to the trash talk. Yeah,
maybe,
I agree with that.
Maybe this is trash talk just for him. And
but I don't think it's a big enough problem
no.
to where I'm sitting there going, oh, well, come on. Now
yeah.
I'm not buying it.
So that's
a very nitpicky list.
And again, it could have been one of those where we got to come up with 10 things because that's
yeah.
what the internet likes is a list of 10 things. Bitches love lists.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just, who sells their soul just to make a list to keep people happy?
Yeah. You want to get to your list of the top...
You want to do the top five? All right. This is our new segment called the top five. It's a top five list of... this is a top five managers in WWE history.
And admittedly, I don't know. Brad, you've been like a lifelong fan of wrestling.
I have been.
I had a stint when I was younger. I watched it. That's what I wanted to be, was a wrestler. And then I figured out, like, I'll probably die. and then I went away from it, and now I'm back to it. So you know a lot more about it than I do.
I know, if only that there was, like, a network that you could watch for $9.99 a month. That would give you an archived history of the entire business.
Who has that kind of time to watch all that stuff?
That's fair. That's fair. So the top five managers I have in WWE history, and please feel free to go to at WrestleMania Pod on Twitter or Facebook.com/WrestleManiaPod and give us your thoughts on my list. But at number five, Sensational Sherry or Sensational Queen Sherry. Sherry Martel, who was a legendary female wrestler.
Who'd she manage?
Her most highest profile was the Macho Man Randy Savage when he became the Macho King, and he had his one of his final heel turns in WWE. Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
She actually sang the original Shawn Michaels theme song before he went back and sang it.
I'm just a sexy boy.
Yep, she used to walk out with the mirror.
Yeah.
I believe she managed the Million Dollar Man for some time, and the model Rick Martel.
Are Shawn Michaels and John Cena the only two that had that sang their own?
Own entrance? No, I believe the Fabulous Freebirds sang theirs.
Oh, well, R-Truth, too.
R-Truth. I believe Coco Beware sang his. Coco Beware had a great one. He actually had two. There's two versions that you'll hear. There's one that's Pile Driver, which was a song that was on a WWF album, and the music video. Go Google that right now. Mm-hmm. It is glorious. They are at a construction site. Vince McMahon's in a wife beater. Hulk's out there. The whole gang. And it's, Pile Driver, your love is like a pile driver.
That's so...
It's terrible. So 80s cheesy wrestling. It's just all of it. And it's a big stew of 80s cheese in wrestling. It's amazing.
It reminds me of when... Rodney Dangerfield did the Rappin' Rodney song. You remember that?
Oh, I don't.
When it's like him and he's got this big stereo on his shoulder and he's wearing overalls and it's him. It's like a rap song, but then he does one-liners.
So like one of those old 90s cheesy rap songs that they'd use for like kids. Yeah. Like and cereal commercials.
It's like, we already think you're funny, Rodney. You don't have to. I don't know. I'm trying to find the song. Keep going.
Number four is Jimmy Mouth of the South Hart.
Okay.
One of the most iconic antagonistic definitions of like the...
Sorry, that was a little loud.
That was really loud.
All right, here's the YouTube, we'll see. All right.
Oh, that's the Coco Beware. That's the second version of his entrance. Come on, everybody, get up off your feet. And then he had the dance. He'd be flapping his hands.
Yeah.
And he had Frankie. He had Frankie as McCall that came out to the ring with him.
All right. That's good, right?
That's good, yeah.
You had Jimmy Mouth of South Hart.
Yes, number four. He was the definition of the pipsqueak manager.
Oh, he was
tiny little guy, never
sunglasses.
Yeah, sunglasses constantly. Never, he'd be involved in matches, but it was always more of like he'd come in while the face was down, and the other his tag team had already beaten them up, and he'd come in and do a few kicks, and then the guy would get up and he'd run out and tag and always run away. And he was most famous for having the sunglasses, the megaphone.
Yeah.
That he always was yelling through, and his jackets, his very colorful jackets that always would be airbrush. Airbrush is big in wrestling. Like, Google, do you think wrestling has kept the airbrush business alive?
That and dead homies. Because it's always dedicated to somebody that died.
Dead homies and Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Did you say who he managed?
The Hart Foundation. Earthquake, Hulk Hogan in WCW, Earthquake, Dino Bravo,
The Honky Tonk Man. Yeah.
And then also the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine when they became Rhythm and Blues, country singing, not really country singing, more like, I guess, yeah, like, well, I guess rhythm and blues. So number three on my greatest managers of all time countdown, Mr. Fuji.
Okay.
Mr. Fuji was the little Asian man who had the cane that he would always hit people with. Really the master of the foreign object as a manager.
He looks like a random task from Odd Job.
I was going to say Odd Job, yeah.
Random task is from Austin Powers.
Yes. He was the, like I said, the master of the foreign object. He had his cane, and then when he was managing Yokozuna, he had the salt that he would throw into people's eyes.
Yeah.
And he was just great, and he was also really funny when they would do, they had these funny Fuji kind of segments that they used to do, and yeah, he was just very funny and very stereotypical,
Asian
play up the stereotype. Yeah, so he's definitely my number three.
Okay, cool.
He was the first manager of Demolition, one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And actually, when Demolition was kind of at their best, he managed, like I said, Yokozuna. He managed the Barbarian and the Warlord and several others. So, number two, Paul Heyman.
And who's his client?
Brock Lesnar. And he's number two because he, besides Lesnar and Punk, that's all I'm really familiar with him as a manager.
Didn't he manage Cesaro a little bit?
For like 2 weeks.
But he's a heel manager.
Yeah. And he's become a face just because of how good he is on the mic. People love him. I mean, he's amazing. He's probably the best speaking manager of all time. He cuts the best promos of any manager in history, I'd say.
He can improv, too, because I remember there was a particular episode of Raw where the mic kept breaking like three times. And he's like, can we get a mic that works? But it was funny, you know?
Yeah. And he
called attention to it.
Yeah, he's never going to be awkward.
Yeah.
You're never going to have the kind of boring, awkward promos where you're just like, because there's some promos that you cringe watching. You're just like, this is so bad. And you're never going to find a Paul. But he's also been doing it. I mean, he used to do ECW. It used to be produced out of his mom's basement.
Yeah.
I mean,
when I listen to interviews with him, I feel like it's always he's always still kind of putting on that character.
Yeah.
He's an active roster member. So I feel like, he's always still trying to sell to you, even though he's genuine.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the run that he's had with Lesnar since Lesnar came back has been unprecedented.
Yeah.
So, it's been huge. The amount of push they've given him. And then when he was with Punk as well, I mean, he was with Punk while he was managing Punk for the 434 day title run.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If you're going to look at the wins, like we talked about earlier, with wins and losses mattering and stuff like that, the title runs and stuff like that, he has two of the most significant storylines in wrestling of the past decade.
And Punk didn't need him, really.
No, but he was made so much better with him. Mm-hmm. When he used to carry the belt out and just hold it up for Punk, that was great. It just fits. They had such good chemistry.
It's more evil, more sinister.
Yeah.
All right, what's number one?
Well, real quick.
Okay, sorry.
A couple honorable mentions.
Okay.
The Doctor of Style, Slick.
All right.
Who then became Reverend Slick. He was the stereotypical kind of
evangelist.
He used to have this turn out the lights, the party's over.
That was his song?
Yeah, every time when his team would be beating the jobbers. And he managed the Twin Towers, which was the Big Boss Man and Akeem.
Well, those fell. Sorry.
I'll never forget.
Boss Man and Hakeem.
Akeem.
Which, not Hakeem.
Go ahead. He was Akeem the African Dream. And go ahead and Google what he looks like.
No, I'm sure. I don't even have to.
Oh, no.
The Gospel According to Slick here on YouTube. I'm going to turn it down so it doesn't blow our ears out. Let's see if it'll play. I just pulled him up on. He looks like the typical preacher.
As we enter the new year, the Reverend Slick have a vision.
This is terrible.
I have a vision of setting new goals for my life. And I have a vision of helping you, my brothers and sisters, to set new goals. goals that are realistic, goals that you can live by. And one of the major goals I want you to set in your life is to be all that you can be. But no, no, it doesn't end there for me. I have a major goal as I embark upon my mission of setting a light in the World Wrestling Federation. I have a goal to reach someone, anyone that will hear my message of light. Happy New Year.
That was a clip I just played. I had no idea how it was. Happy New Year. Just but- like.
That's Akeem, the African Dream.
Oh, but he's not that black.
He's not black at all.
That's crazy.
They just put a big white guy with a beard and a dashiki and called him the African Dream.
Whether they put a black guy as an African guy, that's racist, but also to put a white guy in the African outfit, it's kind of racist too.
Do you know what his character was before Akeem?
Hillbilly.
One man gang. A biker.
That's kind of one man gang. Okay, I see. Yeah, that's such a
horrible character. So
there's a picture of, it looks to be one man gang, and then a guy, he's shaking over the barrier, and he is the African. This guy is dressed up as the African. Was it the king, African king?
Like
the guy you just said.
Oh, Akeem.
Yeah. So this guy is dressed like Akeem,
and the other guy's one man.
The one man gang. You can Google it.
But, it's probably like an Undertaker versus Undertaker match.
No, this is like a fan that dressed up like him. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And my other two honorable mentions, Miss Elizabeth, mm-hmm. Who we, of course, pay homage to by referring to every diva manager now as Miss Elizabeth.
It's not sexist. It's just funny.
It's just funny. And she, of course, managed the Macho Man famously, mm-hmm. and the Mega Powers when he was with Hulk Hogan. And then the other one is our old friend, Lonely Virgil. Virgil was a great manager because he was also the, which now you look, they can never get away with that angle. Mm-hmm. The million dollar man abusing his black servant-esque, manager who he would order around and remind him of, Virgil, do you want to go back where you came from? Huh? You remember? Do you remember Virgil? You remember where I pulled you from? Remember where your family was? I can never get away with that.
Just laughing maniacally.
So you ready for number one?
Yeah, let's hear it, man.
All right. I think most people can see this one coming. Bobby the Brain Heenan. Famously managed Andre the Giant. Mm-hmm. Also Ravishing Rick Rude. Kurt Hennig. One of the best heel announcers, mm-hmm. and the originator. Yeah, hilarious. And the originator of the heel manager as far as, cheating, mm-hmm. Cheating to win and everything else. The segments he used to do on Primetime Wrestling with Gorilla Monsoon. Mm-hmm. Those two had some of the best chemistry in professional wrestling.
I have a kind of an interesting story. Well, you decide if it's interesting. When I would watch WCW is what I watched when I was a kid, and they were going to have an appearance. It was Bobby the Brain Heenan and the Nitro Girls. And it was during when I was in school, so I asked my grandpa, I go get this guy's autograph for me. Because it was a Kroger, the Kroger that we frequented. And my grandpa is a very Catholic guy. Probably, he was like, this is the dumbest thing ever, I'm sure. But he goes and gets their autographs, so he gets the Nitro Girls, and they all got their tits out. And again, super Catholic guy, so I'm like, oh, this is perfect. And then I got Bobby the Brain Heenan's autograph. And to this day, I don't know where that is. I don't know where it is. But my grandpa on my behalf met Bobby the Brain Heenan.
That is like
at a Kroger.
At a Kroger.
At a Kroger. Which is seems like a weird place
to have
unless you you're the Wienermobile or some kind of driver who is sponsored by anything that Kroger carries.
Well, it's weird. I remember when I was in second grade, my grandma took me out of school early to meet Randy Whitman, who was the white 11th man for the Indiana Pacers at a bank.
Yeah,
one.
It's a weird.
It's just weird.
Appearance.
Yeah.
Do you have any other weird things where you met somebody, but it's like at a fireworks stand or something crazy? Was that the only one where it's
that's,
a bank?
Yeah, that was like the only one. I don't think I've ever met any.
Unless it's like a convention where you're like
you're expecting to meet.
People.
Yeah, I'd say and then just comedians from this.
Yeah, that's a weird, but that's the thing that's cool that your grandma took you out of school because that's the thing you remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think my mom would have let me go out to meet Bobby the Brain Heenan, but you know, that's cool because you remember that. You know?
Bobby the Brain Heenan was just by far he had the biggest storyline in probably wrestling history is Andre versus Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
It led to the biggest live. Indoor event in history. And it was, initiated. Andre became a massive heel out of nowhere just by aligning himself with Bobby the Brain.
Yeah.
That's how over of a heel manager Bobby Heenan was, that as soon as Andre walked out with him, he was immediately the biggest heel in history.
Well, that's why a pairing with Cesaro and Paul Heyman was weird, because Cesaro is a fan favorite.
Yeah.
As a face.
Well, but Heyman
is kind of a favorite, though, even though he's a heel.
Exactly. It's the Steve Austin thing. No matter what heelish behavior he shows, people will get behind it because he does it so well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Heyman. If Heyman, honestly, if I would have watched more ECW, possibly.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I might have given him that. But Bobby the Brain Heenan to me is just the all-time iconic manager. That's what you think of when you think of a wrestling manager.
Here's
Bobby Heenan.
One that I'm surprised was not mentioned at all was Paul Bearer.
It was between kind of him and Sensational Sherry for that fifth spot. But again, the only people I'd really ever associated him with was The Undertaker and Kane. Whereas everybody else had been associated with numerous people, with the exception of Heyman. But Heyman's on another
level. That's just one dude, right? There was no other.
No, Paul Bearer. He's the only Paul Bearer.
He changed his look, though.
A little bit, yeah. Depending on
Undertaker. He talks like, but he's a real.
He's an actual Paul Bearer.
Yeah, that's crazy to like play what you are.
Have you ever seen? Have you seen his sons?
No.
When they were at the Hall of Fame inducting him?
No.
His son did an impression as well. And they're, oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll see if I can find it on here.
I wish he was still alive because I would wanted him to be my pallbearer.
Oh, that would have been the best.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine?
Yeah, because I always liked him. And he sold well, especially with like the gimmick when he's got the urn, and that's the Undertaker's power, and he's in the middle of the ring, and it's got the light in shining out of it, and he just sold well, too. He played well with, if Kane's coming after him, oh, that wasn't me, that was the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Like, he just sold really well.
And he was
just
Kane's father.
He was Kane's father?
Mm-hmm.
That's not real, right?
No, okay. No, but that's, that was one of
the
stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just imagine, like, when he's doing the pallbearer in real life, and somebody's like, "Do you have like? Is there any way we can like finance this?" Oh yes, 3, 6, 9 year options.
This one is a nice mahogany coffin.
Notice the velvet lining.
Here's a video from YouTube. It's Roman Reigns' spot on impression of Paul Bearer 2014. So if I can, okay. It's got a weird music over it. Let me try it again. They put music over this video. But, like, he does a good face and stuff. Hold on.
You can faint it, yeah.
Who puts music over it? Unless I'm just, I don't know. I'm still figuring out the sound, but I don't think that's my end. I think that's just a stupid
video. That's a weird. You can faintly hear it if that's.
That's okay. So I guess we can train. Are we finished with this?
Yes, was the list. That was
the top five.
That was the top five.
So I guess we can transition into talking about card subject to change because Paul Bearer is in.
And yes, is Percy. In
Percy
yeah,
Pringle.
Working Percy Pringle working with Kamala.
I heard about Kamala from listening to the Stone Cold podcast with Jerry Lawler because that's when they introduced Kamala as the Ugandan giant. And then I was not familiar with that at all. And then he wrestles, and it turns out he's also, like, it's a movie about the indie scene, but he's driving a truck. He's a truck driver.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's what I did before wrestling, and that's what I went back to after. And he's managed by Paul Bearer. And it's a fun interaction.
Oh, I remember Kamala.
Yeah.
He scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because they did a great job of really marketing and setting him up.
Well, he's a huge guy.
Yeah, and they did these vignettes where he was, like, supposed to be in, like, the jungle and stuff. But in reality, it was, like, Florida or something.
It was in Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah.
Waller says that. He's got a great look. He's got it's the white face paint. He's a black dude. Anytime black and white, they go together.
And he never spoke.
It was all grunts.
It was all grunts.
It's cut him and Paul Bear go together.
Yes, they really just hearing them have a conversation.
Yeah. So it kind of shows the underground part of indie wrestling. Or in this movie, you see a lot of guys that had their moment, you know, the Kumala or
the Road Dog,
Sabu.
We also saw the cameo by Doink the Clown
in the back
in the locker room for while the door is shutting.
Well, let's talk about where you watched it. I watched it on Hulu. I think you watched it on the same.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch it on Hulu for just how much?
$7.99 a month.
I don't know.
I'm using my girlfriend's.
Oh,
account.
You're a thief.
So how do you get your WWE Network programming?
Let's not talk about it. But then I Googled it. I think it's on Daily Motion, so you can watch it online if you don't have Hulu. Overall, I thought it was a good documentary.
And very, very good.
It
very entertaining.
Out with the main guy, I don't remember. It's been a week. Johnny Falco is the guy's.
Talking about the promoter.
Follows a promoter, but it also follows the wrestlers as well.
Yeah, that is Johnny Falco.
And he sounds like, if you're familiar with stand up at all, it's if you're a comedy nerd, Eddie Pepitone, because they're both from like New Jersey, New York area, and it shows him just he's like putting up posters. That's how. But I think we went to wrestling one time because we saw a poster, so that marketing still does work.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah,
it costs you 10-15 cents a poster.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be a lot cheaper than it is, you know, airtime, buying like a radio spot,
yeah,
or anything, and you just yeah.
It mentioned how many? Do you remember how many shows this guy puts on, Johnny Falco, a year? It was like 200. Shows.
I thought it was like 60.
Oh, maybe it was 60.
I thought he said 60 because he said that's insane. Because I remember thinking like that's one a week or over one a week.
Yeah, that's. But it's kind of a territory thing.
Yeah, he's like the north. He's the biggest promotion, I believe, in the Northeast.
And it shows him, you know, just dealing with talent. And there's one where he's mad at somebody. He's like, "You get your." You're effing fucking ass down here. But he says effing fucking ass.
Yeah.
And he's like, these fucking people.
Oh, when he's on the phone?
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, we're going to have to change.
If that guy doesn't show up, we're going to cancel this match.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is a lot of shit to go through to put on a show. You have to deal with all these personalities.
I mean, and I think we both agreed. It reminded me a lot of stand-up.
Because mm-hmm. We both put on shows, but just from a promoter aspect, to the wrestler aspect, it's very stand up and wrestling are very similar, but you know, only our egos are hurt and not physical, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We don't go, I mean, and that's the thing that amazed me. Like, both professions, the pay has not gone up in like 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I still get paid the same amount to do bar gigs
mm-hmm.
and clubs
yeah.
that I did when I started going on the road 5-6 years ago, even when I started doing, you know, some bar gigs 8 years ago.
Yeah.
The money hasn't changed. The difference is we're still getting typically on a low end $75 to $100 for a show.
For a half hour.
To talk for a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these guys are going out and risking bodily injury,
costumes,
their lives, they have costumes, they have travel. A lot of times they don't get put up in hotels.
Mm-hmm.
They're not putting up 20 guys, you know,
yeah.
for one show. And they get paid $25-$30 if they're,
yeah.
you know, an opening card guy.
But they also talked about, you know, if you're a top tier guy, maybe he said, I catch guys on the way down.
Yes. So we're getting like,
it could be thousands. Cause we saw Rikishi.
Yep.
At that the one wrestling thing, and we were talking about how much, because it was, what, $10?
Yeah.
Per person, there's probably 200 people there.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I don't know if they're making concession stand money or whatever, but I don't know how much he made for that.
I would say at least 1,000, right?
And it was a match before intermission, which I don't know if is typical, because I don't go to a lot of these indie shows, but then they're every...
Rikishi was before intermission? Yeah. Well, that's probably just to get him out.
To get him out, but they were also, like, they probably wanted people to go get autographs and stuff, because between every match they were pushing that. And I feel like he was just in the back like, you better push my goddamn t-shirts.
It's weird. I mean, the same thing happens with comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll see. I mean, I remember being in like Paducah, Kentucky or something like that, mm-hmm. at the bar, and they were having the MC announce that tickets are going fast for the big Dustin Diamond show. And pre-stabbing.
But I believe that they went fast because it's Screech. And
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
People don't know better.
And that's the thing. I mean, and you also saw... you know, King Kong Bundy,
mm-hmm.
was in this movie
briefly
on the same show as Sergeant Jimmy Storm, who mm-hmm. was making his wrestling debut.
Yeah.
He was he had a dad bod. He's like in his late 30s. He
said he had been training for over a year.
Yeah, and it's like, that's...
How much training was this dude doing?
You know what it was?
And you don't have to be cut for me to enjoy wrestling, but...
No, but he didn't even look like he could move around in the ring.
No.
I mean, it was embarrassing, but King Kong Bundy headlined WrestleMania 2 against Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so... Yeah, that to me is, like, guys that are legends in the business will still go out and do some of these... Cause, you know, wrestling doesn't have a retirement plan for most of them, and most of them didn't make, especially in the 80s, I'm sure didn't make enough money to last now.
And it's also the same with, it's Kumala, King Kong Bundy, Sabu, and at the end of it, for some of them, they're like, they're talking about retirement, but at the end, they have the text on the screen, and Sabu still wrestles today, Kumala still wrestles today. Part of me wonders, is that passion for the profession, or is that I don't know how to do anything else and I make more money this way than doing anything else?
I would imagine it's both.
Because you know some stand-ups that they haven't written a new joke, but they're still touring, and I'm sure they have to know that their draw, you know, the people that come to see them are going down, but they make more money doing stand-up than they do working at any other job, driving a truck or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, I did one of my favorite parts of the whole film was when Sergeant Jimmy Storm gets done with his match and he's in the back. And this is the only appearance by King Kong Bundy. He's credited, by the way, on IMDb as starring. He walks by Sergeant Jimmy Storm. You never see his face. Mm-hmm. You just see the back of him as he walks by him. And you could tell... with their interaction, that is probably one of those things that Sergeant Jimmy Storm saw King Kong Bundy before the event. Yeah, and he was probably telling his friend that came out there with him, the guy that had the little private hat on that was out there at ringside.
Yeah.
He probably told him, like, hey, that's King Kong Bundy, man. I remember watching him on Closed Circuit TV at Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania 2, fighting Hulk Hogan in a steel cage.
Yeah.
I got to go talk to him, man. And he probably went over, and King Kong Bundy's like, oh, fuck, another one of these
fanboys,
and the guy is probably telling him, how hey, this is my first match, I've been training for over a year, you know, blah blah blah, and to this guy, this Elks Lodge is like, you know, huge, and King Kong Bundy's just like, oh Jesus Christ, I was in Madison Square Garden selling out, you know, like, just this is nothing for him. So he sees him after the show, he walks by Sergeant Jimmy Storm, who is hunched over from, I don't know if it was just jubilation of getting his first match done, or if he was just exhausted.
Ass whooping is what it was.
And King Kong Bundy pats him on the shoulder and just says, hey, how'd it go? Good job, buddy. Just walks, never waiting for a response.
Yeah.
Just completely dismissive. It's one of those things where, you know, he just saw him and he's like, oh, fuck, I gotta say something.
Yeah.
You know, and then
make this guy feel better.
And then I love how at the end the text for him is Sergeant Jimmy Storm didn't make it as a pro wrestler. Oh, you don't say.
But he referees.
Oh, does he?
That's what it said in the thing.
And he hopes to get back into pro wrestling. Yeah.
I guess it's like if you wanted to be a writer, but you could still do stand up to get timing down. I guess you kind of know the ins and outs if you've at least have some experience wrestling, and then you could. I'm sure nobody sets out to be a ref.
Well, you see,
nobody's I want to be a ref.
I don't know. Justin Roberts said he dreamed of being an announcer.
Okay, but that's different.
Yeah, ref, that's true. Refs generally, use the old.
Did I see what? What were you gonna say?
I Am Comic.
Yeah,
with the guy who had not done stand up in like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes his big return, and he's doing, like,
yeah,
the bar shows. That's the same way. Like, look at Road Dogg. Mm-hmm. Look at that event he was in.
They're wrestling in a baseball field.
Baseball field. Like, a minor league baseball, I'm assuming.
And the guy's like, I don't know if we're going to – there's definitely not 200 people out there. That's the Johnny Falco, the promoter. And so it's – you can kind of tell it's not full.
No. Yeah, it looked like maybe 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's that part where Road Dogg goes through the table.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, like, a very good-looking table.
No.
You know, like, it looked like an actual...
And it wasn't planned either because no. Falco afterwards is like, yeah, we owe the baseball field $50 for that table.
Which, first of all, what kind of table?
Money. Yeah. Like, was this a gold table?
And, yeah, he goes through it, though.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, man, that's passion.
Well, and this is Road Dogg, who was in DX.
Yeah. Well, not only that, and now granted, this documentary is about, what, 5 years old?
I think it came out in 2010. Yeah.
Road Dogg is now with the company, with WWE, yeah, in a behind-the-scenes role. Mm-hmm. And occasionally comes, you know, back with Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
Like, they'll come back. But, yeah, just, I think that was more passion. I don't think he was hurting for money.
No.
I think he just loved doing it, and... it's like Sherry Martel said, mm-hmm, in the interview with her, which actually ended up being Sensational Sherry, number 5 on the list.
Yeah.
That was her last interview. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you could see she was fucked up during that interview.
Mm-hmm.
But like she said, she enjoyed the independent shows.
Because you can get away with a lot more. You
don't
have to
it wasn't as strict. Yeah. You weren't under the spotlight of 18,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's a couple hundred people in a gym.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I kind of feel like some of those people, when they were talking about, like, no, I just prefer the independents, you know? Like, but
that's when guys say, I don't work comedy clubs.
I don't work the clubs because I don't want to deal with that bullshit.
It's because you're not good enough.
Exactly. Like, you know damn well
if
the improv, you know, if the improv called you tomorrow, or if Comedy Cellar called you and said, hey, we need to book you for a week.
Yeah.
You wanna go? They'll be there in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But it's an easier way than to say, I'm just not quite good enough.
Yeah. It's just a cop out.
Exactly.
Some people don't know that they're not good enough either.
No, there's a handful of exceptions to that. Mm-hmm. Doug Stanhope being one of them.
Yeah,
Doug Stanhope can do wherever he wants, but he has chosen. And honestly, I'm sure it may even be because he knows.
Yeah.
If he goes into the club, he's going to be a mediocre draw on pay, mm-hmm, whereas he can sell out
to his fans
at these independent venues and probably do a lot better with merchandise as well.
Well, it's kind of the CM Punk was on top in WWE. He's like, I'm out of here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the guy who can say...
do what he wants.
Yeah.
And also with Colt Cabana to an extent now.
Well,
he's got a following.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he tried to be in WWE.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but... you know, with a podcast and independent.
Oh, yeah. Now he's going to make more money than he would if he was on the main. Because if he's on the main roster, he'd be some comedic character that they probably would have paired with Santino, you know, which is what he would have wanted.
Yeah.
But you're right. He's going to make a lot more money going over to Japan. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure he probably makes really good money just off his, you know, off Art of Wrestling alone.
Yeah. Let's talk about Trent Acid, because we can transition from. Sensational Sherry, because they said that was one of the last interviews, or the last interview
she did, yeah.
And this other character in the, not character, but he's a guy, his name is Trent Acid, and he's got the look as a kind of like a Hardy Boy type look. And just
he had the build, he was athletic,
he's in the matches that they show, he wrestles really well, he takes risks, but then it foreshadows in the movie. It's like, what Trent are you going to get tonight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a couple different people, and especially Johnny Falco. Conversation where he's like, I got this guy coming in. I got Steiner coming in. I think Scott Steiner. And he's like, I need somebody to work with them. And the guy on the other end is like, what about Trent Acid? And he's like, Trent's good, but what Trent am I going
to get? Yeah, am I going to get the good Trent, or am I going to get
the fucked up out of his mind on drugs?
Yeah. Which, again, is another real... That's the same way with comedy.
Mm-hmm.
People used to feel that way with John Fox.
Or Richard Pryor.
Or, yeah, which one's going to show up? Are you going to get the guy that's going to go on stage and then do a meet and greet afterwards and really build your club? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to get the guy that goes on stage that's extremely fucked up?
It's kind of a... Who's the... Razor Ramon. What Scott Hall am I going to get tonight? And, now, hopefully, you still get clean Scott Hall.
Yeah, he seems to be doing a lot better now because, that ESPN documentary they did a few years ago where he's getting walked out.
Oh, you can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, he's getting walked.
Hand him the chair to...
He's just holding the chair. Yeah, and the guy just basically headbutts the chair.
Yeah.
And it's still, you could just be like, that was no impact.
Oh, no. And so... And I think for comedy, at least, that's an 80s mentality.
Oh, yeah.
When coke was rampant.
How do you want to get paid, boys? Green or white? Green or white?
So, at least for
comedy.
Shout
out to Dave Wilson for that, by the way. Dave the King.
But now, I can't speak for the wrestling scene. I would hope that, I think, as a society, we're not so much drug-fueled.
Well, no,
anymore.
Yeah. I think, it's just like with comedy. I mean, you see a lot more guys. It's even different from when I started going on the road. When I started going on the road doing those bar gigs and stuff, we partied after every show. Mm-hmm. You'd party with everybody that was there from the show and the staff and everything mm-hmm. else, and you'd end up getting into crazy shit and doing everything else. Whereas now, when I go out on the road, especially most of the guys I work with, after the show, we go back to the hotel.
Yeah,
you want to go back and get sleep. You don't want to be out. You don't want to spend the money.
Well, for me, it's not even to sleep. It's just I enjoy being alone.
Yeah.
I can certainly talk to people and talk to strangers, but I would rather just go back.
It gets to be much afterwards, yeah. And I think also part of it is growing up, too. I mean, when I started, I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. And you're just happy to be out.
Exactly.
In a bar where you're not supposed to be.
And now... like a lot of those top WWE guys, they're not going out and partying after
it's
their
yoga
show. They're getting on they're playing
bus.
Video games, mm-hmm. And stuff like that.
I think at the when people were doing that then, they didn't realize that was going to catch up to it. But now you see so many dead comedians or so many dead wrestlers, and they're like, that dude was doing coke or steroids or. Whatever, and then people are starting to take notice of, hey, that'll fuck you up. You probably shouldn't be living that way.
Yeah, and it's really sad. And you see, I see a few young guys at open mics now
mm-hmm.
who
got great potential, but then
great potential,
like, oh,
but then you see him drinking now.
How long before you that drinking? It's more about drinking than it is about stand up.
Yeah, when I there was probably a good 3-year span where I basically used every show as an opportunity to get drunk for free mm-hmm. and try to get laid.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even focusing on writing material as much as I was trying to do material that I thought was going to get me laid after the show. And I'm still not a good comedian, but I'm a much better comedian now that I'm
that you're focused on
that I'm focused important. On comedy and I'm trying to. Because I guarantee you, John Cena wasn't one of those guys who was out there drinking and doing blow and shit after,
mm-hmm.
he was working on getting to where he is now.
Yeah, and it seems like either wrestlers and comics get into wrestling and comedy for either passion or because they don't want to be a truck driver.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got into comedy. I always loved comedy.
It's definitely a benefit, yeah.
But when I wasn't the kid that watched... the Conan or Leno or Letterman monologues and repeated them at school.
Yeah.
I just, when I started, like when my friends talked me into getting on stage mm-hmm. and I found out I had a knack for it and it was fun and I fell in love with it. It became my passion,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't, I didn't want to work a 9-to-5 job.
No.
I didn't want to do the same thing every day. And comedy was like, oh, I get to play
mm-hmm.
and get paid for it.
Yeah.
So
let's, during the filming of this movie, they lose contact with Trent Acid.
Yeah.
And
that was about midway through, right?
Midway through. And then sometime later in the movie, they pick back up with him.
And he looks horrible.
He apparently either his grandpa or his grandma found him on the ground.
Yeah.
On the floor.
He was dead, right?
He was dead. And then he wakes up with his aunt holding his hand. and
they're doing the
hospital.
Yeah, and they're doing the clear.
Yeah,
and everything, and he comes back to life, and he just looks like shit in the interview. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there with that old ass Atlanta Falcons jersey on, just smoking
this
cigarette.
Is 2010.
Yeah,
this is.
Yeah, and I think it was like a Jamal Alexander 1998. Atlanta Falcons jersey.
And he's sitting on the couch and he's like, I've lost so much momentum in the wrestling scene. And just physically, I'm sure he wasn't hitting the gym because he was hitting the pipe. I didn't plan to say that. But it's not funny because of what happens. Your phone ringing, Brad. God damn it.
I thought that shit was on silent.
But then he's like, yeah, I could get back in the top shape that I was. And it's not a positive outlook because he's like, I could do that. It's not, I'm going to get back in shape. I'm going to, you know. And then you find out later that they're like, yeah, Trent's dead.
Yeah.
And you're like, Jesus Christ.
It's a heavy thing that they kind of drop it in there.
Yeah.
But like I said, once you start seeing those updates about – basically, because they're just doing really the updates about him.
Yeah.
Like, they're not really updating anyone else throughout the film. Mm-hmm. You're kind of like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
One of these is going to say he died.
Yeah.
And that was Jamal Anderson is what I meant to say. I think I said Jamal Alexander. It was Jamal Anderson.
It's fine.
I didn't want people nitpicking it. Tweeting us.
The other wrestler, I think I'm thinking, sorry, I hit the mic. The other guy is Kevin Sullivan. Were you familiar with him at all?
A little bit. Just mainly, though, through, like, I know he was part of, like, the Dungeon of Doom in WCW. I know he had a big role in, I believe, ECW.
Yeah.
And then I know he still does a lot. He still works behind the scenes for WWE.
And in the movie, he owns a gym in Florida, I think.
Yes. Yep. And because they were saying there's a lot of other athletes in that area, and they'd all been clamoring for a gym. So he's another one of those guys that goes out and does those independent shows for the passion, you can tell. He didn't seem to be in need of money.
Because he's in shape. He's 60-something.
Oh, yeah. He looked great.
He's born in 1949, and he looks great shape, takes bumps, sells. And there's a Billy Gunn wrestles a match with him, and then there's an interview post-match. He's like, it's just an honor to work with Kevin Sullivan.
So Billy Gunn was coked out of his mind.
Was he?
Oh, you could tell. Look at how fast he was.
Yeah, that he was.
I mean, he's one of the greatest of all time. When you're in there with a guy like that, it's just...
Yeah. But
but that's a little sincere as well. That's very sincere as well, yeah. He's one of those... He reminds me of like a Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah.
A guy who, because Gilbert Godfrey, if you get a chance, regardless of what you think of him, he puts on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
And he keeps it fresh. He keeps it updated. And there's certain guys that are out there like that come back and do new stuff every year. And that's what Kevin Sullivan reminds me of. He's a guy who's going out and wrestling in a Elks Lodge because he's not good enough to wrestle anywhere else. But he has to wrestle. Yeah.
Let's touch on Terry Bunk or Brunk. Sabu, he's like it's kind of the story of he's on his way down type, and he's like I don't know how much longer I'm going to do it, and then at the end it's again he's still wrestling.
Yeah, he's
taking the big bumps, he's taken through the table still.
I mean, he was one of the most popular ECW wrestlers in history,
and you can see by when he's like putting on tape and stuff that his body's just all fucked up and scarred up. So he's put his life on the line for the profession, but he's still doing it.
People say these guys know how to fall. I tell you what, you're going through a table like that, your name is Sabu. That ain't just knowing how to fall. There's some serious injury risk there.
Who else? Everett Titus, who is now
with Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor.
You could tell. He was the hot stripper.
Yeah, he definitely had a look.
At the strip club, yeah. Like, he's the one, because every time even if you go to, like, one of those podunk, dirty little strip clubs, inevitably, there's generally one girl who looks like she doesn't belong.
Yeah.
Now, whether she's there for whatever reason that's not, obvious, she looks like she should be in a nicer club. Mm-hmm. That's who he reminded me of. He was working some of those house shows. They're like, okay, he's in really good shape. He had his son.
And there's that scene where he's getting ready to go and wrestle or do a match, or he's packing, and his son is watching wrestling, and he's like, "Daddy, why you gotta leave?" And he laughs it off, but you know it's gotta hurt, because
he's
living his passion, but it's also his kid, and just inside, I'm like, oh, fuck.
Well, and he kept laughing it off, and his son just kept going, like, why?
Why? Like, he's like, maybe you can come watch me tonight.
And then they show the event, and you know damn well, like,
because if he was there, they would have showed him.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, but honestly, like, I kind of, like, I understood that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean.
Well, you have a kid.
I have a kid, and she's, Harper, that's my daughter, Harper, she's done that a couple of times. Mm-hmm. She knows now.
Yeah.
It's expected. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, except for Summers.
Yeah.
Summers' daddy's always home, and he's sad on the couch. But then fall comes around, and daddy's gone every weekend.
Yeah.
So that really hit home to me. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I get that. It's hard to do. But, I mean, it's weird. People kind of look at it like you're being selfish when you're an entertainer of some sort that does that.
Yeah.
But if I worked for a company mm-hmm. that sent me, you know, out every weekend, well, he's doing what he has to do to provide for his family.
The thing is, you can be – you're around for the summer, and even if you have a night gig, you're around from Sunday to Wednesday, even Thursday, and you're off all day.
Exactly. And if there's –
so there's definitely
her birthday, I can make sure I don't work.
Yeah.
You know, when she has big things
– at least she gets one day a year, Brad.
She should be happy with that.
Yeah. So that was a weird, tough moment in the movie.
And then, but it was kind of funny too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And then I want to also talk about Lacey Von Erich.
That's it. Yeah, I was going to talk to. And it's a, they say it's a legacy dynasty thing, and I'm not familiar with her family.
Her dad was Kerry Von Erich. Mm-hmm. The Von Erichs were very legendary Texas wrestling family.
Okay.
Big in, I believe, NWA. Mm-hmm. But most people from my generation probably know Kerry Von Erich best as the Texas Tornado. Mm-hmm. Who came in the early 90s, he came into the WWE. He won the Intercontinental Championship, and he looked like he was going to be this really big, huge star, but there was a lot of drug problems amongst that whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he kind of was one of the guys that succumbed to drug use, because he was exactly what you would have expected out of a wrestler in that era. He was a chiseled, good-looking guy with a ripped body. It was weird. He kind of was like the Ultimate Warrior without the face paint and the intensity.
I have a TV tray, and it's a metal TV tray, and it has Hulk Hogan, Big Boss Man, somebody else, I don't remember, but then the Texas Tornado, and he's the only one that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But now you gotta put two and two together.
And he made a really hot daughter.
Yeah.
She's
a good wrestler in the movie.
She's, yeah, like, honestly, I'm surprised that she's not signed to WWE. But she looked like she had some crazy in her, too.
It said that she left wrestling to pursue some other thing. And who knows if that's a
blowing a producer?
If that's a real answer, or if it's just she wanted to go do something else.
Or, yeah, she could be strung out somewhere. And they're like, oh, she's pursuing other endeavors.
Yeah, instead of, you know, hey, he's dead. He's pursuing other. She's definitely got a look to be a WWE diva, and she was on TNA for a while.
Yes, yeah.
It says husband. I googled husband, and it. Okay, the first picture was Hulk Hogan. I'm like, I don't know if that's right. anybody else we want to talk about?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Necro Butcher.
Oh yeah, yeah. And if you've seen the movie The Wrestler. With what's his face?
Mickey Rourke.
He's the guy in the hardcore match.
Yeah,
he's
tells him about the lights.
Yeah, and he's like, "What do you want? Whatever you want to do, sir." He's very respectful of Randy the Ram in the movie, and then it cuts to them hitting lights on each other and tacks and stuff. And in this documentary, it's just a hardcore match. Or I think he said he wrestles in Japan too, but. The ring is just lined with fluorescent light bulbs along the ropes.
He's another guy that he was just like, I'm going to find my niche.
He's like, I could bust my balls working a 9-to-5, but I can make the same money doing that wrestling.
Yeah, I love when he said, if I stayed in West Virginia, the best job I could have hoped for was working at the sawmill.
Yeah.
But that sawmill ain't going to fly me to Japan to work at their sawmill for 13 times what I'm making.
And he's also, he's like, I'm 32. Or it's some young age, and it's just a close-up of his face, and you're like, oh, God. You have lived a rough life. I don't think it's the matches. It's probably something else. But
I've moved out of girls that I had no business being with.
Yeah, because of wrestling.
Yeah, because they're so hot. That's what he said.
Yeah, he's definitely has like a hardcore look. Like if he would have fit right in when they that hardcore era.
Oh yeah.
Of WWE.
And he'd been perfect in ECW.
Oh yeah.
And that scene where he just has a chunk out of his arm.
Oh, it's just an
ambulance.
And then later it's like he's showing his elbow and he's like, it looks like my arm dips down, but that I just lost too many chunks out of it. You're like, Jesus Christ.
He's speaking of keeping the continuity of this comparing to comedy. He reminds me of Ari Shaffir in a way.
Oh, he's definitely has that.
A little bit of that look, and then he's just that rebellious attitude.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to do mainstream. Because if you don't know Ari Shaffir, you should Google him. He's a brilliant comedian, mm-hmm. very funny, very nice guy as well, the brief times I've met him. But just not mainstream. Mainstream, but not mainstream. Mm-hmm. Has a very big cult following.
Yeah.
But he hasn't had, you know, like a primetime Comedy Central show, and he hasn't been given those opportunities yet,
yeah.
But there's a big fan base that respects and knows what he does. And that's just kind of the same way with Necro Butcher.
Here's a indie star Necro Butcher arrested. That's 2013. I wonder, Will Edwards and domestic battery. Ugh, that's not good.
Uh-oh.
I've
beaten up girls I had no business being with because of wrestling.
Yeah. Dylan Summers.
Do you think that the domestic dispute involved him using a fluorescent light?
I told you, bitch. Domestic violence.
We do not condone domestic violence here in WrestleMania. But
might as well be funny.
Yeah, if it's gonna happen.
And then anybody else we want to talk about? There were so many people in this movie.
Oh well, we have to talk about the best quote.
Oh yeah, yeah. Let's talk about that. Let's close on the best quote.
Let's close on the best quote. Okay.
It's from Johnny Falco.
Yes, and we talked about Doink the Clown being there. Yeah. I'm trying to think of who else was in there. It was just like sporadically you'd have like, you know, guys like
Terry Funk makes an appearance,
Abdullah the Butcher and like an older footage that they showed. They had James E. Cornette, who was a famous wrestler and manager from the 90s, used to carry around the tennis racket. Orlando Jordan, who was a big star in TNA, was shown in one of those independent matches.
I'm trying to think of. I'm just scrolling through the IMDb, and I recognize, and some of them.
Kamala, and we talked about with Paul Bearer, the scene where they're dancing.
Oh, that was just funny.
Yeah, that was one of those things. Like you could tell, like those were two guys that were also doing it, and you know, for their passion.
As they walk into the dressing room, and they're like, "That was fun, Paul or Percy." He's like, "Yeah, it was." So they, you know, they enjoyed it. Anybody else, or you want to?
I think that's about...
All right, let's leave him. The context is Kevin Falco, Johnny Falco.
Johnny Falco.
I don't know why I said Kevin Falco. Johnny Falco, the match where they're wrestling in the baseball field. And he's like, you know, they didn't lose their ass as much as they thought they were going to lose their ass. And he's just complaining, you know, about the whole match. And he's talking about...
I was disappointed in the midget match because it went too short. And he says it sincerely.
But nobody, like, he doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, he doesn't put any irony together that the midget's
just too short.
It's so good.
We use the guy that we don't normally use. That's it. But, yeah. So that movie, again, is called Card Subject to Change. We watch it on Hulu.
And highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a great movie. So that's this episode. Check me out on Twitter at Brent Terhune or BrentComedy.com. I'm on Facebook. Brad, you are indie.
Brad Scott on Twitter and Instagram, I believe, as well. But there's all links to all that good stuff at bradscottcomedy.com.
And follow the show. It's WrestleMania Pod on Twitter and Facebook. It's facebook.com/WrestleManiaPod. We're on iTunes, so give us a review or 5-star review. Just don't say we suck. If you think we suck, then go review. roster reporters.
Yeah, if you want to say we suck, tweet us that we suck. We'll retweet all your harshest criticisms.
Yeah.
Feel free to post harsh criticisms on Facebook as well. We're self-deprecating. We love that kind of stuff. As long as it's clever and not just kill yourselves.
So, yeah, thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You're fired!